have a quorum, we'd like to call a meeting of the Higher Education Finance Committee to order. And we'd like to also, as we get started, we need to keep the doorway open somehow, so if you can find a place to stand other than in the doorway, that would be very helpful. I know it's very crowded. If there's any empty seats back there anywhere, raise a hand, and I think we can fill it. Otherwise, we can't ask you to squeeze together.
Can I sit on laps?
Well, we'll just make the best of it. We do welcome you all to our hearing today, and we will get underway here in a moment. We do need to have someone make a motion to approve the minutes from March the 14th.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Okatz moves the minutes on Monday, March the 14th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, our agenda today is House File 566, and the author is Representative Ray Cox. And we will begin. We have until 2:15, so we'll hopefully be able to move not fast, but steadily. Welcome. Would you like to move your bill, Representative Cox?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move House File 566 before the committee today. And to get it in the form I would like to have it, I have amendment, two amendments, actually. You should have in your files there the amendment 80566DE1, the delete all amendment.
To move that one now at this time?
I would like to move that one first.
Okay, Representative Cox moves amendment 566DE1. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? And the amendment is adopted.
And I should have explained to you, members, DE1 essentially puts it in the form that the Senate has taken action in moving on the bill. And then I have amendment A1 in the form that should be in your packet also. And this is language that I would like to add on. It is not in the Senate version, but as you take a look at that, what this amendment would do would add a fourth section or a fourth clause here where it would require the students participating under this act to file an affidavit with the institution of higher education stating that the student either has or will file an application to deal with the immigration status. So I would like to move that amendment at this time as well.
Okay. Representative Cox moves House File, or the amendment 566A1. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Marion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, Representative Cox. My understanding is that this language is similar to language that exists in some other or similar legislation that's passed in other states. Is that correct?
That's correct, Representative Marion and Mr. Chair. All the states that have passed this, and there are eight, have included this, and I visited with some of those state representatives on that, and felt that we should be doing the same thing. I should also let you know I've visited with Senator Pappas, who's carrying the bill, and theirs was moving forward at the time and when we brought this up, and she's agreed to just accept House language on this to move forward in the final committee bill.
Any other discussion? Otherwise, all those in favor of Amendment A1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And it's adopted.
Okay. Members, the bill in the form then before you essentially deals with resident tuition for students that are not necessarily residents, permanent residents of the state of Minnesota. This is an issue that you've dealt with, and depending on what you have, the makeup of your House districts, this may touch all of you that are here, it may not, it just depends what the makeup of the population is, but the bill would allow students that have graduated from Minnesota high school or have received a GED certificate and have also attended school here for two or more years to enroll, and if they've been accepted then as part of that process and wish to pursue a further their education, it would allow them to attend our state public universities and colleges as residents. It's essentially acknowledging that with the attendance and graduation from our schools, we would consider them residents. And a little bit of a background, you should know that about, I believe, 14 of our state institutions currently do not charge a dual rate. They have a single rate, and this bill would not have any effect for them. But there are the remainder may consider a student out of state without this bill being put forward. And essentially, what I'm trying to do is remove the barrier to allow students to further their education. These are, if you're accepted by our public schools, they're showing a desire to continue their education and hopefully become productive tax-paying citizens and get the training that we are offering here in Minnesota. And if it's a non-resident rate, I don't have to go over with the committee the differences between the resident and non-resident tuition rates. But that can be substantial. That difference may be what keeps them out of higher education. And I think that we all know that the benefits of higher education, I don't need to go over that with you either. The similar bills have been enacted by eight states now in the United States, and we have about 18 that are dealing with it right now the same way Minnesota is, that are essentially moving this similar legislation, including Florida, Massachusetts, and others. We have some big states that have this. Texas, under President Bush, when he was governor there, signed it into law. And I think that there, and as I pointed out, we have little states too that have are considered this. So it is gaining popularity, and I think that it's something that we are able to enact that will help people that are here in Minnesota now, regardless of how they were either arrived here, brought here, or whatever, when they graduated from our schools, we've considered them essentially residents through the K-12 system, and we've invested a lot in these students. There's some tremendously talented people that are being kept out of the higher education opportunity for that. And that's, I'll take any questions you have right now, but I do have a few people that would like to address the committee. If there's questions.
Representative Opatz?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cox, what is the obstacle in the statute now that necessitates this language? In other words, a student, a young person who has gone to, as this suggests, would have had to go to a high school, state high school, shows up at the door of one of our colleges. What is raising a flag at that point preventing this or in requiring that we do this? What's happening?
Well, I might be able to have Kathy Novak or somebody even address this possibly, but as far as I know, Representative Lopez and Mr. Chair, the forms that the colleges use may have information gathering tools on them for other things. The Higher Education Reporting Act and so forth ask citizenship and sometimes on this. And if that comes in a negative response, that the schools may put them in the category that they're non-resident and then they would be exposed to the higher tuition rates right at that point. There isn't stuff that deals with immigration services per se on the higher education forms and things, but the information that is on there together for other reporting purposes really kind of triggers it the way I understand it. I don't know if you can do a little more in-depth.
Mr. Chair and members, there is no statutory barrier in Minnesota. Minnesota, unlike some of the other states that have passed this legislation, does not define resident for the purposes of establishing resident tuition. But there are barriers in the application process. The institutions themselves rely on a definition of resident that's used for the purposes of paying state aid that defines a resident as a resident of Minnesota, which in fact means a legal resident of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bopatz.
The fact that, as you indicated, 14 of our public institutions already have an internal policy that is obviously not creating a barrier for students who fall into this category, it strikes me that this isn't something that requires statutory change. It sounds like the Board of Trustees of the Minsky system could do this. And if not, that's what I'm trying to get at. What is it that's holding back the system or the University of Minnesota from simply recognizing these students as resident students? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Representative Patson, Mr. Chair. That's a good point, and I think that it would be the university and Minsky system would be totally open to, or it would be in their purview to go ahead and make this change. The 14 institutions that do not make distinctions between out of state and in state are primarily our border states, and I think that they, frankly, I'm not sure when they made this change, but it was obviously an implementation process that they reviewed and just felt that they would either market themselves a little better or whatever reasons they chose to do this. I think that obviously we have some limitations on what we could ask the university to do, but the MINSCUs, we could direct them to no longer have any non-resident resident rate differentials. I don't know if we would want to do that, though, because there may be some things that relate to things that I'm not even aware of right now, especially related to our medical training and the people that would come for medical from other states to access some of our facilities. I don't know whether we would really want to go down that in that way, but it could be done. You're right.
I get the impression that Ms. Novak may have maybe able to clarify this.
Mr. Chair and members, just to clarify a bit, the barrier for the institutions to establish a different definition of resident for the purposes of providing resident tuition is in federal law and not in state law. And federal law provides that an alien who is not lawfully present in the United States shall not be eligible on the basis of residence in a state for a post-secondary education benefit unless any citizen or national of the United States is also eligible for that benefit. And so that's the portion that the university and MINSCU are subject to.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up question to Ms. Novak's comment, and that you can offer a benefit as long as you offer it to every other U.S. citizen. So what would this do to the non-reciprocity states that a student might come in from? Let's say a student comes in from Indiana. Can we have this enacted? Can we charge them out-of-state tuition or not?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, the bill that's before us is defining resident eligibility criteria for resident tuition on the basis that doesn't involve residents in this state. It defines it. You have to be a high school graduate from Minnesota. You have to have attended high school in the state for 2 years. And you have to register as a student in a public institution. If someone from Indiana, for example, could meet that criteria, then they, under state law, they would be eligible for residency.
Yeah, so Chairman, yeah, when I read the bill, I realized that. But if we were extending that policy, then we can limit it. What you're saying, I guess what I was interested in was what the definition of federal law was there in terms of whether that would override what we're saying in the bill or not. And you're saying it would not, as long as everybody has to meet the criteria in the bill, regardless of where they're from.
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, that's my understanding. And that's how the bills have been structured in the other states that have passed.
And Mr. Chair, I believe that is correct, too. In other words, using the illustration of an Indiana resident, if they came here and lived with their aunt or uncle or in your basement or whatever and were here for 2 years and graduated from the high school here, then this would apply to them, too.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Would you like to call your first witness?
I would. There's two young women from Bethlehem Academy, I believe, or I guess we have one of each. We have Angela Fuentes and Oscar Gomez. Angela, if Angela can come to the table first and address this. Thank you. If you can state your name.
Angela, welcome to the committee. And would you identify your, tell us your name and so forth?
Chairnornes and committee, good afternoon. My name is Angela Leon Fuentes. I'm coming from Faribault. I'm a senior in high school and I'm 18 years old. I was born in Veracruz, Mexico, and I came to the United States when I was 13 years old. I won the Dream Act to pass. Last fall, I traveled to 12 cities in Minnesota to talk about the Dream Act so that more people can support it. When I was a child, I dreamed of being a doctor or a teacher. Now my dream is to become a veterinarian. I would like to go to Rochester Community and Technical College. And at this college, I can study for 1 year and be a veterinary assistant. I want to go to college to succeed in life. And I believe I can do it. I have faith in myself. I have faith in God, in college, and in this government. Through college, I can get the education I need to be what I want to be. At first, I didn't want to come to the United States because I was scared of the new way of life I was going to have in here. And I didn't speak any English. In my first day of school, I remember it was really hard because I couldn't speak any English. I couldn't ask anyone for help. I didn't know how to do it. And that made me feel really sad. Now I can speak English, and I can ask for what I want. If the Dream Act doesn't pass, I can go to Rochester Community and Technical College. It is the college that has the major I want. And without the Dream Act, the college charges me $8,000. And if the Dream Act passes, it'll charge me $4,000. I want the Dream Act to pass so that it can help me and help other people who, like me, have dreams of a good future.
Thank you very much.
Well, an average student.
Okay. I just want to comment that we appreciate the enthusiasm, but typically in a hearing we don't applaud. So if you can hold your enthusiasm until after the meeting is over, appreciate that. But it was very well done. Appreciate that. Anyone question our witness at all? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bienvenido, Angela. How old were you again when you entered the schools here, the public schools?
13 years.
You were 13. And how old are you now?
18.
You're 18. So 5 years in the schools. And Mr. Chair and Angela, if you're able to go forward with your education here, would it be your intent to find a way to stabilize your residency here in the United States?
Yes. So I would like to work on what I want to be.
So you you would look to apply for citizenship here in the United States?
If I got the chance to.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
And members, I think when Angela referred to the DREAM Act, that's a federal language that's matching this. This is kind of referred to that as too, because they're kind of moving along. There's been a push to have some federal action on this so that it doesn't have to move forward on an individual state action. I think individual states will probably make it a little easier to move something forward if they decide to take something on a federal level, but that's what the DREAM Act is. And I think, as you can see from Andrew's testimony, a young woman that comes here when they're 13 and speaks English so well now and is doing well in school, the talent that we have, the talent pool to draw from, is can be a real benefit to the state here if she's allowed to continue her education. So thank you.
Representative Mariani, could you ask another question in Spanish?
I'd be delighted to.
I just have a question. I don't know if you indicated any brothers and sisters.
I have one brother.
How old are you?
8 years.
8 years.
He is born here.
Representative Cox?
Well, I was going to say that Angela points out one of the other issues, the difficulty with this, is, as she's pointed out, her 8-year-old brother is born here and is a resident, is a citizen of the United States, regardless of the status of the parent, and it creates an issue within the family that is, you know, problematic as you start planning for your education to have differences like that. So this would take care of that, too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, we have another question.
It's a question for Representative Cox.
Okay, Representative Cox.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cox, I'm looking at the amendment, the A1 amendment. The expectation then is that anyone who would take advantage of the in-state rate, who does not have legal status, would be expected to be making progress towards getting that legal status. What's the situation now that there aren't other incentives moving young people to do this anyway? I don't know what the situation is. Why? Apart from now the incentive in order to access a higher education institution, that there wouldn't be incentives or interest to be filing an application to legalize his or her immigration status anyway, and I'm just curious what's out there, what's going on that either that isn't happening or it is, and this will encourage it.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lopez. I don't think that there's probably any necessarily official barriers preventing this in place. I brought the amendment forward to clarify that I was expecting that as part of this process to gain access to the universities and colleges that we have here, the public ones, that it would be expected that they would, you know, address their resident status. I think a number of the students that move forward on this probably do intend to do that when they reach the age of majority and move forward and address it. This is just basically bringing language forward to that they give the institutions an affidavit saying that they either have or they will do it. I think it's good for the institutions to have that too.
Oscar Gomez, is that your name? Welcome to the committee.
Chair Norris and committee, good afternoon. My name is Oscar Gomez. I was born in San Luis Potosí, Mexico. I just turned 16 years old yesterday. I'm a sophomore in Bethlehem Academy in Fargo, Minnesota. My dream right now is to be a doctor or go to fly airplanes in the Air Force. I really like the idea to be a doctor because I love to help people. I need a good education because I want to help my parents with money. And if I have children, I want them to have a better life than I do. One possible college for me is the University of Minnesota. I really like this university because it's really big. There is many interesting people, and it's a famous school, too. My dad and my mom didn't finish high school in Mexico, so if I go to a college, I will be the second person in my extended family of 50 people to go to a college. My sister is going to sixth grade. She's a little annoying, but I love her. Finally, in my family, I have a cat. His name is Bigotes, who means whiskers. When I was 11 years old, I came here to Minnesota with my dad, my mom, and my sister. So it was the only place I live in the United States. When I came here to the United States, I didn't know any English. I didn't even know what means. So coming to the United States was the hardest thing in all my life. I couldn't communicate with people. I was like a baby, simply. One day, in the public park next to my house, there were white kids older than me. They wanted to beat me up, me and my sister. I wondered why. But I didn't know English, so I couldn't speak to them. I knew from their faces that they wanted to scare us. My sister and I were young, so we preferred to run away. Right now, I feel so good in this country because I play high school soccer, I'm in Science Olympics, I play saxophone in jazz band. Most of the time, I speak English with all my friends. Many of my friends are in the honor roll, and they are going to college. I feel so sad when they're talking there in front of me because I know right now it's not possible for me to go there. I really want to go, but I see that my grades is good, so I'm like, why not? I can't go. But if I don't go, I really gonna feel sad, and probably I'm gonna work in a factory, or maybe McDonald's, Burger King, or Taco Bell. That's why I'm here, to ask you please pass the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Oscar? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bienvenido, Oscar.
Thank you.
It's been, how old were you when your family came?
I was 11 years old.
You were 11, and how old are you now?
I'm 16.
You're 16. Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, and Oscar, so 5 years, and your sister was one then? When she
came here, she was 6 years old.
Oh, she was six at the
Yeah,
time.
Now she's going to be 11.
Okay, so Mr. Chair and Oscar, so you were 11 at the time and your sister was 6. Was it your decision and your sister's decision to come to Faribault, or was it your parents?
When I was in Mexico, my parents asked me if I really wanna, and I was like, why not? I wanna learn English. And they did it because they want me to have a better life. Over there, it's too hard to get a job. You can study, but then after that, it's going to be hard to you to get a job. So that's, I want to have a better life for me and for my parents, too.
So, Mr. Chair, and ask you, so then your parents made the plans to bring you to...
Yeah, and they asked me if it was okay for me, and I said, yeah.
Mr. Chair, and ask you, did anyone in your... You went to what school in Faribault again?
When I came here, I went to the public school, middle school of Faribault, and now I'm in Bethlehem Academy.
Okay, so Mr. Chair and Oscar, at the middle school, did anyone in the middle school told you that you could not go to school at the middle school?
Oscar?
The teachers told me later, when I just came here, they couldn't tell me anything because I know any English.
Okay.
So later when I learned more English and more they tell me. And some friends, like Matt, Mr. Muscle, he told me about the stuff, and I realized that was... I tried not to realize that it was true, but then I realized it was true.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cox, my understanding is we have someone here somewhere that may be able to answer some of the questions around the issue of K-12 access, but it's my understanding that we exist under a longstanding Supreme Court decision that provides for access to all minors residing in the United States, regardless of status. Is that your understanding, Representative Cox?
That is my understanding. That's correct, Representative Miami. And all schools are effectively under that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
And the point, I think, is, and I think Representative Cox spoke about it earlier, that we currently are making pretty huge investments with very little federal help, I might add, to support a public K-12 system that provides universal access to Oscar and his sister and to Angela and her sibling. And we were told by our U.S. Supreme Court that that would be the law of the land. And I think that one of the issues that, you know, brings this whole bill forward has to do with all of us sort of sorting out for our own minds why we would make that kind of investment in Oscar in our K-12 system, but then choose not to make that kind of investment for his ongoing education, particularly given the fact that nowadays, while a high school graduation diploma is a good thing to have, it's not a sufficient thing to have. That really the goal of our educational system should be, in my mind, and I think increasingly in the minds of many policymakers, that the goal of our educational system really should be to produce people who have higher skill degrees, which by definition takes them beyond our K-12 education.
Thank you. Representative Cox, you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani points out what I was trying to address in this bill, working on it last year and again this year, that we do have a number of students like Oscar and Angela that are talented people. You heard Oscar talk about being involved in soccer and a band and so forth. They're fully integrated and involved and have tremendous abilities, and I think that to stop at grade 12 really is not a good solution. I think we need to capitalize on the investment that we are making in these students. I think gaining the higher educations, I certainly expect that they will have higher earning potential and higher taxpaying potential also that goes along with that. And so I think it's just drawing on something that we already have made an investment in and continuing and moving it forward. At the beginning of the testimony, I said that depending on your districts, I know that you all have students that may access this higher education if this bill moves forward. You may not know them. I do know several of them in my district, and like I say, they're very hardworking students that have a lot of ability, a lot of potential there. When you realize the two that were before us today came here in 5 years ago, couldn't speak English, and hearing them before the committee today, you know, that's an ability that all by itself is something I'm not sure I'd master. But I just think that we need to address this and move forward.
Representative Erdahl, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Oscar, both you and Angela made several references to speaking English. Representative Cox was just referencing that as well. And I want to compliment Oscar, both you and Angela, for your English. And, of course, you realize the importance it is, to the culture that you're now living in and to your future education, the ability to speak English well. And I'm just wondering, you've only been here 5 years, did you learn English through a class in school, through the community, through being with your friends, probably a combination of this, but what? How did you learn English?
Okay, when I just came here, I have cousins who are citizens from here, they speak English, so that helped me too. And when I went to the middle school, there's a class, there's ESL, that for like 1 year, that was only my class all day. They used to teach me books and what was culture in America and all the simple words. And then from the beginning, I had more friends, and I start. And I still struggle with English, but I'm getting better.
And thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions? I guess I have a question probably for Representative Cox. Do you know are there barriers right now that would prevent the parents of these young people from also pursuing a different status?
Chair Nordness, I don't know that answer. I think everybody probably has different, a lot of different ways and reasons that they may have ended up in the United States here without permanent status. And I think that the the students also coming along in that may have differing reasons as they deal with their status, but I do not know that.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then the final student is Shirley Posuelas, and if she can come forward from Minneapolis, Washburn, I believe.
Identify yourself for the committee, please.
Hi. Mr. Chair, Norness, and committee. My name is Shirley, and I'm a junior in high school. I'm Latina. I came to Minnesota 8 years ago. My parents speak Spanish. My favorite food is black bean. You can't tell by any of these things if I'm undocumented. The reason I have a better opportunity to go to college is because I was born in this country. As a citizen of the United States, I believe it is wrong that my friends in high school, who are so much like me, don't have the opportunity to go to college. Immigrant students were brought to this country as young children. They have no control over their immigration status. Only 46% of Minnesota Latinos graduate from high school. Too many students have already given up their dream. About 48,000 undocumented immigrants work in one of these six industries in Minnesota: agriculture, meatpacking, janitorial, food service, roofing and construction, hotel and hospitality. American companies and government make money from their hard work. There are many injustices in the world, but today I ask to help solve a small one. Help my friends who work hard in school to have the opportunity to go to college.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Shirley? I have a sister-in-law by that name. Yesterday I had a grandson by... We won't go into that. But.
6 degrees of separation.
Any other Shirleys in the room? Yeah.
Shirley.
Thank you.
I apologize for that. But thank you very much for your testimony. I have Adele Erickson on the list. Welcome to the committee, and would you please identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I want to thank you for having given this opportunity to present testimony to this committee. I'm a father of two sons, a husband of 32 years, and I represent myself as a citizen of Minnesota in these proceedings. I have two...
You need your name and...
Oh, Dell Erickson, I'm sorry.
Maybe you said it and I missed it.
I'm sorry.
Just for the record to make sure.
Okay. My testimony is composed of two parts, a written part and then brief oral comments. And I'll get right to them. This bill does not well represent the Minnesota legislature. The bill breaks the promise that property taxes and other education funding is to be used for Minnesota's students, our children, my children. Its primary purpose appears to be to further blur, if not eliminate, the distinction between Minnesota and American citizens and foreign nationals, especially of illegal aliens. The bill is an assault on the sovereignty of Minnesota and of these United States. The bill is, the people you've heard are rather self-serving, very heartfelt, and my heart goes out to them as well. But those supporting the legislation are those making, benefiting from the legislation or in the industry itself, and that should be remembered. The bill is fundamentally unlawful and unconstitutional. It promotes illegal conduct. It denies Minnesota and other American citizens access to schools and colleges. It compels Minnesota taxpayers to pay for illegal activities while reducing educational opportunities for our own children. It insults and confuses our basic value system of what's right. It requires, for example, our children in our schools and colleges to accept criminal activities, and innocent students to be treated as distinct classes of individuals in their own communities. Indeed, our K-12 schools have so deteriorated that if a child speaks out against illegal aliens, or often immigration in general, they are sent to the school counselor for diversity training, or suspended from school. Obviously, this bill reinforces the abuse of citizen students at every level. Question. How many illegal alien students is possible? Answer. Virtually all the world's children age 18 and under. Under President Bush, the Border Patrol is no longer asking for identification for those 18 and under. If stopped at the border, a child trespasser is merely told to turn around and walk back. If found in them, they are simply bussed back across the border. No identification, no fingerprints, no photographs is required. The Border Patrol finds only between a quarter and one-tenth of trespassers, with 70 to 90% being missed every day. It virtually guarantees everyone under the age of 18 who wants, or is forced to, will be successful border crossers. Being a soldier short Iraq, the situation will get worse because President Bush is now sending Border Patrol agents from assignments defending U.S. borders to Iraq to secure their borders. In addition, is the instant citizen birth industry. There are more than 300,000 births annually to illegal aliens. Since the babies are instant citizens, they are not counted as illegal aliens, but will attend our schools and colleges and be subsidized accordingly. The practice leads to an almost endless chain of migration, where all of the close relatives are able to immigrate over time to the U.S., including children and siblings. And in a vicious circle, the bill subsidizes their education. None of this is counted as the cost of schooling illegal aliens, however, it surely is. Let's hope that the sovereign state of Minnesota and these United States will not be lost due to some ill-conceived social experiment. Other than the foregoing, what is the bill's outcome? The outcome of this legislation is already seen in California. Over one half of its $35 billion government budget crisis is due to immigration. Much of it from the cost of education. The once esteemed California system of education is now in tatters and failing. Including college students, each Minnesota student is provided roughly $8,000 to $12,000 in annual subsidies. These subsidies are a good thing. They are a very good thing. I wholeheartedly support them. It's one reason why I'm here. Sadly, those subsidies include illegal aliens, and under this bill, increases substantially. Direct costs of illegal aliens in Minnesota K-12 has been conservatively estimated at $68 million every year. It would be relatively greater at the college level. The likelihood is that the actual amount is a multiple of that already high amount, probably twice or more that sum. Make believing the consequences. Minnesota doesn't ask, so we don't know. If it is assumed that 500 illegal aliens graduate at a direct subsidy of $10,000 each, it means $5 million was spent in subsidies for illegal alien graduates this year. However, many costs are not included in these amounts. Consistent with increasing illegal immigration, the dollar amount is rapidly growing. Indeed, as I said earlier, it's potentially without limit. It is limited only by the exceeding the threshold for the collapse of our systems of education. California is a concrete example. Immigration of all kinds, including so-called refugee programs, today threaten entire school systems. Educating illegal aliens should not even be a consideration. The SAVE, Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements Program, must be made mandatory for all Minnesota schools and employers. rather than subsidizing them, all illegal aliens in Minnesota must be discovered and promptly deported. The money saved used to better educate Minnesota kids. Thank you very much.
Any questions of Ms. Erickson? Representative Marion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, Ms. Erickson. It's good to meet you finally face-to-face. We've communicated by email over the years, and we haven't seen eye-to-eye on most of those emails, although I must say that your emails on energy, I think you do also focus on energy policy, and those have been pretty informative. I just have a couple questions really quickly for you. But you put a lot of stuff out here that would take us a long time to get into, so I just want to get into a couple of things very quickly. Do you know whether or not undocumented people in the state of Minnesota pay taxes?
Mr. Erickson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I think what you're getting at is the broad brush view of immigration in general and its economic and other consequences. It would be nice to have that discussion, but I don't think this is the appropriate time of it. In your question, there is some doubt as to whether they do, and some don't. That's as far as I understand.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
Former chair of the Tax Committee, I can inform members of the committee that all residents of Minnesota pay taxes. And if they are on a payroll, you need a Social Security number and it will be mandatory withholding. And if you do not pay your taxes, the Department of Revenue will be at your doorstep. If you buy a house, you will pay real estate taxes. If you pay rent, part of the rent you pay will be part will include a real estate tax that the landlord pays. So, is there greater noncompliance by people who are in the country illegally than people who are in the country legally? Probably, but I think it is an overstatement to say that people who are illegally in the country in Minnesota and are living in Minnesota are not paying taxes.
Thank you, Representative Abrams. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Abrams. Mr. Erickson, do you know whether or not it's a requirement to be a citizen of the United States to serve in the armed forces?
Mr. Erickson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, on the contrary, they actually reward people who are illegal aliens by joining the service to become citizens. So I don't think it's a requirement, if that's your question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it's not a requirement. I have Mexican-American veterans of World War II who live in my district who actually were undocumented at the time of their service to our country during that war, who then subsequently did become citizens. Some of them didn't come back from that war. We currently have soldiers serving from our nation in Iraq who were born and raised in other countries, some who are not citizens who have also not come back from that war. My only point, I guess, here is that I think you raise a number of issues that I think are, in fact, quite important to talk about. My experience with reality in immigrant communities and actually with our populace in Minnesota is that things aren't quite as black and white as I think you've laid them out in your presentation, and I certainly respect your right to have an opinion and express it here on this issue, but I think there are a number of issues you've raised here that are not necessarily helpful to the discussion here and are actually quite misleading.
Any other comments? Representative Cox.
Thank you, Chair Nornes. Members, I forgot to ask, but I think you have the fiscal note in your file. Okay. So that will address the issues related to the finances in this bill. I think Mr. Erickson, points out some important things that maybe could be looked at. I think many of them are probably more appropriate for a federal committee We're not in charge of guarding our borders here in Minnesota, and I do think that the federal government has established birth citizenship for people that are born here, and I think we've all seen how that goes. I think we also probably realize that most of us are immigrants if we go back far enough in our lives, and I think that the issue before us today is, in my mind, solely on providing, seeing if we can provide an equal opportunity for higher education access for students that are here and are effectively residents of Minnesota, and we've acknowledged that in our K-12 school, and allow them to get education and improve their status in life, and, as I've said several times, and I'll say once more, pay more taxes. So we do, you know, I don't, it would be up to you, Chair Norris. I believe we have an immigration attorney that has arrived and is in the room if we want to talk about any of that stuff. I would like to kind of keep it focused on education and not immigration.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Erickson, for testifying in front of the committee today.
Thank you. Mr. Cox, could I have a copy of the finance report at some time?
Yes. You can have this one right here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify either for or against this bill? Okay, would you have a seat and identify yourself, please?
All right. Chair Norms and members of the committee. My name is Eric Rodriguez, and I'm from South Bay High School. I'm 19 years old, and I'm a junior. I came to the United States when I was 13 years old. I was brought from my parents. They made the choice to bring me over here. Really didn't want to come to here because it was in a whole new life for me. It was hard for me living with my friends and my family back in Mexico. But I'm here.
Yes, you are.
As most of the cases, people who came from Mexico don't speak any English, and that's my case too. Didn't speak any English. So I went to the school, and I was one of those guys who sit in the far corner, were sitting back himself because he got no friend, he's by himself, not speaking the language they're speaking, of course not understanding. So I was doing bad on my grades and all the stuff, and then I met some couple friends who were members of some gangs. So I started going out with them and hanging out with them and trying to join doing that stuff. My mom found out about it, take me out of the school, said this is bad for you, and once you realize what you're doing, you're going back to school. So I dropped out of the school for 4 years, but in 2001 I get back to high school, thanks to my mom and some other people that I met. And since I get back to high school, I started, of course, I learned for English between those days that I dropped out of the school, because I went to a school where they only teach you English, which is myself, who was 16 years old, with all guys that were like 20, 25, 30, 40, 50 years old learning English as well as me. So I went there for 2 years, then I decided to go back to high school. Back to high school, start freshman year, I was doing pretty good because I knew the language already. So I started getting good grades, then I met one of my teachers in my freshman year and talked to me about a group that called Alianza in Sacra High School. It's a Latino group who worked in most of this case, working with this bill that we're talking right now. And I started going and I said, well, this is fine. I should keep going to school. Sophomore year, I get more involved. And then I was a member of the student council. And that went well. Now my junior year, I found out that after high school, I got no more chance I do have a chance to go to college. But seeing that while there's between me and there, it's too hard for me. So I decided, well, I won't give up. I see many of my friends saying, well, I better drop out of the school so I got no chance to go after this. I tell to them, like, you know what, don't give up. We are fighting for it. So I'm here. But now I'm a as I said before, when I get here, I was one of those bad guys, and thankfully, it wouldn't be for my mom, I wouldn't be here today. Now I'm involved in student council, I'm vice president on the junior board. I'm involved with peer educators. I'm involved with this group called Alliance. I'm involved with a leadership group. I'm involved in a lot of stuff, and I'm thankful for that and for those people who are around me and cheering me and all this stuff. But as you can see, after the high school, all my dreams that I have, my dreams are going to college. I got three choices to pick it up. I will want to work in the medical field, either there or being a counter, or be a guide tourist. But if I don't get the chance to go to college, how am I going to do it? I mean, look at these people around you. What harm can they do when all they want is just want a chance to demonstrate to the people that we don't want to harm anybody. We just want to have a chance to get higher and higher and show that we can do as everybody else does in here. Not because we have different colors, we don't have the what it takes to do it. So I'm asking you guys to help us make our dreams come true. Don't let us die. I mean, I'm sure that if you go somewhere else, let's say you go to Mexico, you're going to have the same problems in trying to learn other languages. It's the same with us in here. So, thank you for listening. Oh,
thank you for your testimony, and you're glad you made the decision to come here?
Thank you.
And compliment your mother when you get home.
I will. I will.
We're very proud of her, too.
I'll be all the life until I die.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions?
Thank you, Bray.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, it isn't working too.
You also want to be a representative, I suppose.
That's true. But, I mean, like, being a student is not that easy, especially when you're supporting your family. Because right now I'm the man of the house, kind of, because my mom is a single mom with three children. So I'm working 40 hours a week, going to the school, and getting involved in all the stuff. I mean, like, all these people in here probably do the same, and we just want a chance. Thank you for that.
We compliment you. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Susana de Leon. I am an immigration attorney. I have been in the Twin Cities since 1989. I went to school here at the University of Minnesota, graduated from the William Mitchell College of Law, having practiced in an immigration court since 2001, and before as a student attorney, I was practicing also with a supervisor. I am well aware of the community issues. I am also well aware of the political climate, both because I'm aware attorney, you know, being myself from Mexico, you know, you won't find many of those attorneys here in Minnesota. So the people that I'm going to speak on behalf of are not only my community, but they're my family, they're my friends, and this brings a very big dimension to what I'm about to say. On the one hand, I would like to remove this discussion from the issue of entitlement to one of basic human rights and a human rights framework, which I think would be very helpful to think of, especially as we move forward as human beings, and also on another level, as people who are thinking about cost benefit effects and economic effects. That will also be, in my opinion, a plus for the state. And lastly, as an expert in immigration law, I will illustrate very briefly, because I think that might be a piece that we need to go into further if you wish with your questions. But briefly, the issue of students being here, you know, accompanying their parents, has an immigration dimension that is really complex, because immigration law is one area where I have to read up on every day, and I'm in court all the time. But one of the things that I constantly see is the sort of very slow but sure conversion of families from one status to another. We're talking about you know, mixed status and what that means, what does citizenship means, you know, versus everything else. I like to talk about it in two ways. There are two kinds of people in the world, real citizens and then everyone else. right? And unless you were born in the United States, had a grandfather or a grandmother who was born in the United States, or somehow, through many operations of law, had maintained this link, you might in fact be a United States citizen, even if you don't know it. Believe me, I have one such case in court right now. And so, you know, sometimes we don't really know if we were just to make a divide on who is documented and who's not documented, we might not even be giving people the fair share. And I am saying this with full knowledge of what goes on in immigration in Bloomington. But one thing that maybe we can all look and think of is that families of mixed status, citizenship, residency, or some sort of visa status have a way to come in the pipeline for residency and ultimately citizenship. So it is difficult to think that parents who are right now with temporary protected status, who might eventually become residents, such was the case with Nakaya, Section 203 and 204, that, you know, eventually these families all became residents. What happened to the young people in, you know, in the interim? And this is a lot of what's happening here. And then there's the other question that sometimes, you know, we have missed opportunities for reforming immigration law in a way that is meaningful. And that is not really the question before us right at this level. That is a question that's greater than this one education. I don't think it's just a benefit, but it is an investment for us as we look at this young men and women who will eventually be a part of this economy. And if we don't take care of that, people who are deserving are going to fall through the cracks. And furthermore, we're really missing on money that they can pay to our schools. And we're really missing on the opportunity of creating this great diversity at the university. I was one of 74 people at William Mitchell, and I was the only Mexicana there. So I think both in our judicial system will be well served by having more people who represent the diversity of our state and of our country all together, without, you know, thinking of any more ways to divide us. I believe that in the immigration context, there are many, many paths, and there are also many paths that don't exist. So it's hard to ask these young people, create a path in the federal government that does not exist for you. However, in the immigration context, we got to understand the complexity, and we also got to understand that many of these people would eventually find some way to get there, and many will not. So how do we balance those two realities? And so last, I want to address the fact that these are my family and my community, and that's because I once also was not a legal permanent resident, and I once also, you know, had to face all the hardship, and my family has had to do that as well. And now I sit here with you, you know, with full citizenship rights and the law degree, and I think that's what many of these young people, many of my brothers, my sisters, is what we're asking for right now. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Again, thank you for
thank you.
Being willing to step forward for your comments. Representative Cox, any curiosity? Okay, we have one other person coming forward. Please identify yourself.
My name is Ellen Kennedy. I'm a professor at the University of St. Thomas. My specialty is immigration. And since I'm at a private institution, there is nothing self-serving in terms of the benefits that we at a private school might see from this legislation. But what I'd like to do is frame this issue at a somewhat broader level. If we think ahead a little bit to the year 2050, the demographic forecast is that the issue and the label of majority and minority in this country will change, so that most of us who are sitting here at these tables will no longer be in the majority of the population in this country. What that means is that people in the universities also will need to look different from the way they are now if we're going to be able to continue to be a knowledge society. We're seeing that there will be 17 million new jobs created in the next few decades, and yet our population is only going to be able to fill 12 million of those jobs. Where will the skill come from? Where will the people come from? So I support this legislation, but I ask that we think about this longer-range view of who it is we will need to be educated in order to be able to sustain the kind of economy that we have. Thank you.
I just need to ask, are you representing yourself? Or
yes, I'm representing myself.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have... What's that? Close the coin? I think you're both going to sit down. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, member of the 30, I'm Father Larry Hubbard. I'm out of breath because I had to go and put some money in the meter. But I wanted to be here. I had to be back in the parish, but I wanted to be here for this hearing. And I feel it's so important that we really take into account the fact that people want to be documented.
Can I interrupt? What parish do you...
I'm in Creation St. Oakland, from South Minneapolis. Is that... Incarnation, Sagan Quinson, South Minneapolis. Only because the people that I've worked with at that parish for the last 10 years are people who want to be documented and do everything they can to be documented, and they cannot get documents. It's impossible. If people go to look for documentation, they're in jeopardy of being deported. Right now. And I mean, husbands are taken away from their homes. Wives and children are left alone. I've seen so much. I worked in Spanish for 35 years and broke my heart when I come back to the United States and work with these people and see how good they are and why they're here. I've worked in Latin America. I know what the situation is with our economic policies in Latin America and why people come here. And they come here and they want to work. They want to work with documents. They cannot get documents. It's impossible. And so they come here to work because our business people say, come, we have work. Come, we have work. I visited people's homes throughout Mexico, other places in Latin America. I've been to many countries visiting the people that I work with here. And let me tell you, the people that come here are good. They want work. They are told, we have work for you. Come. And they come, because we're going to go. The situation which we find ourselves every day is worse in Latin America. And we have to go to the whole question of the dynamics of our foreign policy for that. But I mean, it's a situation that, you know, in many ways we've created, and so the people are responding. And I just suggest that that's something to consider.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Yeah. Welcome to the committee, and would you identify yourself?
Thank you. Yes, my name is Jerry Collart. I appear as a taxpayer of Minnesota. I've been paying taxes for more than 50 years. I have a stake in this. I support this bill. I just want to remind the committee that we were, of course, settled by immigrants. I have a grandmother who came from Austria, a grandfather who came from Russia. Many of the settlers in Minnesota came because they received free land. Now, at the time they received it, they were not residents or taxpayers of Minnesota. They became so because they, in order to get the land, they had to farm it for, I believe it was 5 years or longer. They became citizens and taxpayers. And so corollary here is that these young people who would be entitled to attend college at in-state tuition rates would become taxpayers, and they would more than compensate the state through the taxes that they would pay. I just want to, again, reiterate my support for this measure as a taxpayer. Thank you very much.
Well, we thank you for being willing to come forward and
yes.
tell your story.
Hello.
Identify yourself, please, for the committee.
My name is Colin Cousins, and I'm an 11th grader at Southwest High School in Minneapolis, and I'm representing myself right now. I just want to say that the hard work and the diligence that the students in my school, the undocumented students in my school, put in every day just to get through class that I complain about inspires me, and that's why I'm here, because I want to support them. And in response to a few comments that have been said earlier, I believe that the people that are coming to represent Alianza with our school and just with the Isaiah here aren't just the people that this will benefit. I mean, people like me, I'm a junior, so I'm looking at colleges now, and it's so different from me, who I'm looking all over the country at different schools, because I was born into a family that's not wealthy, but that has the opportunity to do that. And I don't consider myself any better or worse than any other student in my school, yet I have this opportunity to look at these different colleges. I'm granted this opportunity just because of who I was born into as a family, in my family. And I believe that these kids aren't asking for anything more than they deserve. They're just asking for an equal opportunity to go to a Minnesota school. And in response to the comment about illegal aliens and how they're affecting our country, if we lost all our undocumented citizens now, our economy would crash. They're in our meatpacking plants. They're in our canning plants. I mean, our country is thriving on undocumented citizens right now. And if I had my way, I would open up the borders to them, because I've also had the experience to. I lived in a different country for a year where they spoke Spanish, and I mean, the trouble that these kids have to go through to learn a different language, and to actually stay. I got to go there for 9 months and then run back home, but they have to stay here and live here and live every day speaking a different language and learning a different culture. And let me tell you, it's a really hard thing to do, and it, especially when you're not supported by the government. So that's all I want to say.
Well, thank you again for being willing to come forward. We have a little time remaining. I think the gentleman back here was first. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Hello. Identify yourself, please.
My name is Chuck Wilt. I'm a retired social worker. I am a member of Isaiah, and in 2003, I was fortunate enough to be on the Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride. And I wish to speak in favor of this bill for a really selfish reason. Before we came into this room, we met in, and all of the kids here talked about what they wanted to be if they could finish college. There were doctors, lawyers, veterinarians, certified mechanics, travel industry, so many different things that I feel I would be cheated if these people were not allowed to complete their education and provide services to this state. Without them, I think we're going to be in worse shape. With them, I think we can really move on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Identify yourself, please.
My name is Jesus Torres from Owatonna, Minnesota.
You want to spell that?
Jesus, spell like Jesus. My friends call me Jesus too.
What was your last name?
Torres, T-O-R-R-E-S.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm 20 years old. I graduated from Owatonna High School. I came to the United States when I was 15 years old. My parents decided to bring me with them. They didn't want to. I just want to give you another example on the immigration side. There's plenty of differences and plenty of reasons why people are here without documents, and there's people in different situations. In my situations, my parents, my mom has sisters that are American citizens, and American citizens have the right to ask for any family members that are in other countries and bring them over here. In my case, my mom is in that process. But the process with brothers takes 10 to 15 years in order to become a resident of the United States. Right now, my mom is on the 8th year, so she still has plenty of 4 years to wait. So that means that this bill will allow me to go to school. Meanwhile, that process is still going. By the time I become a resident of the United States, I'll be way beyond my education. I'll be probably finished college by then. It's just an example of how this bill will allow students to continue. And this generation of students will be able to continue with their education by the time they become residents of the United States. So I just wanted to give you a brief example of how on the immigration side.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you for coming forward. Anyone else want to testify for or against?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. My name is Somlisi Tisai, spelled S like Sam, O-M-L-Y. Last name Tisai, S-X-M-I-T-T-H-I-S-A-Y.
Very good, thank you.
I'm a taxpayer. I came to the United States 12 years ago. I learned English a little bit when I was in Laos. I got a scholarship going to Singapore learning English. Then I came to the United States. The second day I got a job as a clerk, typing clerk. 6 months later I went to the university and I paid everything by myself because I was working. I am favor for this bill because as an immigrant myself, I look at other people here. I think that if we nurture them, they will be another taxpayer. And at the same time, I think that they will be another add value to Minnesota as well. So this is why I'm here. I couldn't get that word.
That's right. We have the same problem once in a while.
So this is the only reason I'm here, and I hope that all of you can think about this long term, that they will be other taxpayers for other generation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I see no questions, so... Representative Cox, I'm not sure if there's anyone else. Would you have any? We have one more person that wants to. Welcome. You can identify yourself, please.
My name is Dana Pena, D A N N A P E N A. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. And.
I was brought to the United States when I was 5 years old, so I pretty much speak English because I study English since I was in kindergarten. Right now I'm a sophomore at Brooklyn Center High School, and I have my dreams too as everybody else does in this room. I want to become a psychologist for children. I think that as I have my dreams, everybody in here has their dreams, and that's why we're fighting for this bill to be passed. That's why, because we all want to become somebody. In my family, I'll be the first one to go to college, and that'll make me so happy, and I know my friends will be too. I think that for me, I want to become somebody. I don't want to be a nobody later on in my future. I want to be somebody, somebody who my parents will be proud of, as much as my community, as much as my family. So there's really no more things to say, because everything has been said. Just by us coming here, everybody in here wants the same thing that I do. So just by coming here, we're saying everything. We want this bill to pass so we can all become somebody and don't be a nobody in this world.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's not easy to come up and sit in that chair, is it, to represent the price? Okay. Any comments, any final comments, Representative Cox, on your bill?
Thank you, Chair Nordness and members. I think the testimony has been good, and I hope it's been helpful for members to hear this. In summing things up, we have two issues that are related to this bill. There's the what I'm going to call the economics. I think that Ms. Kennedy, I believe it was, that summed it up very well when she reminded us all at the beginning of this session. We heard overviews from Minsky and the private college and the university talking to us about what the demographics of students are going to be like in Minnesota in the next 30, 40, 50 years. We are going to be having differences in our college pool. The college readiness is a huge factor. I think bringing this bill forward would let these students know that they have an opportunity ahead of them. And many of these students are going to be our future doctors, lawyers, carpenters, masons, mechanics. You heard it. We are going to incorporate them into our society, and a bill like this will allow that to move forward in a transition method that is workable. As I said earlier, this bill also will more than likely enhance our tax collections, because I think these people will have the opportunity to move into well-paying positions and pay the according and commensurate taxes with it. There's also, as you heard some of the people speak today, there's a human rights issue in this, and I think that we have to acknowledge that no matter how these students are and their families are arrived here, they're here. And as Ms. Novak pointed out, the federal government has told the states, you know, you need to address the fact that you have all types of residents and people living in your states, and give them the best education you can. I don't think that needs to stop at grade 12. I think we can provide the opportunities here, and Minnesota's got good opportunities to do that. We do know our demographics are changing, and I think we need to reach out to these students and allow them to become part of that. So I would hope that you can, Mr. Chairman, that you can accept the bill and incorporate it into the final committee bill. Thank you.
Chair will hold House File 566 for possible inclusion. Well, we have a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Proceed with that.
Chair, I didn't realize you're moving toward adjournment, but I just wanted to comment. You know, I've been on this committee for many, many years, and I think there are probably two committees in the legislature more than any other that have as part of their mission providing opportunity. And I think we heard that very clearly today, that this proposal fits very well within that mission. And I'm sorry I interrupted you, because I think you were just about to explain to the audience what the process is in terms of how this bill may move forward. But I just want to thank all those that testified, and hopefully in the end we will meet that mission that we have, and that's to provide opportunity to the people that are in the audience and that unfortunately maybe weren't able to be here today, that are asking for that opportunity to improve their lives and contribute to all of our lives when they're successful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Let me just say something quickly. I want to thank you, Representative Cox, for carrying this bill, but also for the way that you structured the bill. And I don't want anyone to leave this room thinking that, because these are very difficult issues for the legislature to talk through. I think there are all good reasons, a lot of good reasons to pass this bill, but they do bring up very difficult issues for most members to talk through, and many of us have not had that opportunity to do so in recent years. But I don't want anyone to leave this room thinking that Representative Cox has put a bill out there that's going to make it really easy for folks. You've drafted a bill that really requires something of these students. Mm-hmm. It's not just anyone walking in through the door here. You're requiring at least 2 years of attendance in a Minnesota high school. Plus, obviously, they're going to have to graduate. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of students that don't graduate. Plus, they got to get into a post-secondary institution, which also means plus they have a commitment to pursuing a high school degree. Those are a lot of barriers there, if you will. I don't think of those as barriers. I think, you know, challenges. It's not an easy role for anyone, citizen or otherwise, to pursue. And so I think you structured a good balance here that says to students, if you're willing to make that very hard lifting, you know, type of work, meet these conditions, then we will continue our investment in your future and in our state. And clearly all of these things speak to a commitment to the state of Minnesota. So I just want to compliment you for structuring a good mm-hmm. bill in that way.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And I think that you point out that if the one of the difficulties, of course, is there are standards and there are things that have to be met in order to take advantage of a bill like this. And I think having it there, providing and not basically encouraging discouragement that there's a sort of hopelessness that you can't further your education and then you may drop out, you may deal with these issues. And then members, I would also add that one day this last fall, I met with many of the people that are in the room here as part of a walk they were doing. They came into my district and met with me there. And this was a big component of what they wanted to see brought forward. And that's really what really started pushing me to try to carry the bill. But as I visited with those people and learned, the various backgrounds where they're coming from, again, I can't stress the hardworking abilities that are out there, and that something like this will allow them to draw on the most of their abilities by getting that education. So I think it's something that is time, and we can join some other states, hopefully, if it can be included in the bill, Mr. Chair.
And I'd like to again thank all of the testifiers today because you did a good job. And the rest of you listened carefully, and I think it's been a good, very productive hour, closer to two, I guess. But
mm-hmm.
The way this will work, we will not be taking a vote on this bill today. So just so you know, this committee puts together a finance bill that's passed later on in the session. That will encompass a number of issues that come before this committee. So what we'll be doing today is rolling this bill into that omnibus bill, or at least for possible inclusion into that omnibus bill as we assemble that a little later on in the coming months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the process. So this time the chair will lay House File 566 will be held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.